Completely Conspicuous, episode 452, December 27, 2016. Welcome back to Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week I've got part one of my conversation with guest Jay Breitling as we discuss the year in music. As always, please send any comments, questions, or already broken New Year's resolutions to jay.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at compconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at KumDog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And now, on to my conversation with Jay Breitling.
All right.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Movie Phone.
Yes, Movie Phone is alive and well.
This might be the only remaining vestige of Movie Phone as us making the Movie Phone joke.
Every year. I think we've done this. This might be...
Can't be 10. Is it 10?
No. I think we started in 2010.
Yeah.
Either 2009 or 2010. But like, so it's been either 6 or 7 years in a row.
That's a good long stretch.
Yeah, of us blabbering on about the best music of the year. But I am joined by... Jay Breitling. How's it going, Jay?
It's going real good.
We're here in Arlington, Rock City.
Drinking the Peak Organic Winter Session Ale.
Yes,
the unwitting non-sponsor of ComCon number 5 billion, whatever episode this would be.
Yeah, this is, it's going to be 450,
I know.
I was thinking,
you're heading towards 500, which is a remarkable accomplishment, and I salute you.
For those about to rock, I salute me.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of insane.
And especially because it's not your only game.
No.
You've got a lot of
action. And it's completely under the radar, which is even more amazing that I'm still doing this. But hey, what the hell? Who cares? If you're listening to this, and if you're not...
Good night, dog.
Good night, H-Dog. Oh, here comes a Huggy.
Quick hugs.
All right.
Huggy tackle.
Be good.
Wow, that hurts, man. Damn.
Cold.
All right. Got shot down by H-Dog. Oh, now he's coming back.
You got 5 for Kumar?
Quickly! Oh, you punched me!
Fist.
Dude!
Fist of hate. Alright. Alright, more hugging. We'll edit it out in post-production.
Sure.
Alright. Why don't you just go upstairs and close your eyes.
Night, Chloe.
You have 5 for Kumar?
Ow!
That's better than H-Dog's.
Yeah, so we are here on a Friday night, we are wont to do,
to talk rock and
drink beer,
mm-hmm.
and drink rock and talk beer. So, it's been a pretty effed up year, 2016.
Yeah, there's a lot one could say, unfortunately, it probably for a lot of people it overshadows how they feel about everything about the year, including the music, but... there certainly was a lot of good music, and we'll get to that. But the year didn't go as planned for a lot of people.
No, well, yeah, certainly,
especially the dead people.
A lot of people who didn't live to see the end of the year. Yeah, obviously there were some huge goddamn names in music who died.
Yeah, Constellation's gone dark.
Yeah,
in the,
Bowie. Prince.
Those are the two big names right there.
George Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And countless others, really. It's kind of insane. And even like...
You'll have to do a montage.
Sure.
In
memoriam.
Embed that in the download.
The tail end of last year, Lemmy died.
Mm-hmm.
Right before the end of the year. Oh! So yeah, it's just you know,
I forget, honestly, I had even forgotten that the events of this
Lemmy,
year,
like Scott clips. Weiland died right towards the end of last year, as I recall. But
yeah, I remember that because there was a post on the internet memorializing it. One, I couldn't believe it, and then two, I just, I don't know, I guess I found it interesting, we'll say, that some people like Scott Weiland enough to memorialize it a year later. I mean, no offense against the guy, I just feel like he was kind of take your dude and roll. I don't know, he wasn't exactly celebrated by you know, a certain strata of
I wasn't
music
a fan.
Yeah. I like the radio hits, you know, not the stuff right in the middle, but you know, the early stuff, you know, and you know, not so early that it was underground, but you know, when they broke through, I liked that record, and I used to go to, you know, hang out with some people, and I remember the best record this woman had was like that Tiny Songs from the Vatican or whatever it was, and you know.
That was the best record she had?
That was the best record she had. And
that's
then,
a rough collection.
Yeah, well, and this you know, this is going back pre-ubiquitous internet, pre-streaming. So, you know, you'd go to people's, maybe the young people listening to your podcast don't even know
what
this is
like.
You used to go hang out, and, you know, especially like going to parties or whatever where, you know, maybe you know people, maybe you don't know people. But so you'd go hang out places, and if you're a guy who listens to podcasts or a girl who listens to podcasts, you probably did this. You would go see what they had to listen to,
right?
And then you take over.
And then you would judge.
You would judge, and you would find the best record they had if they didn't have any good records, and go with that. So, yeah, this woman had her best record was that STP record.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, certainly people like Glenn Frey died this year, who, you know, I wasn't a fan of the Eagles or Glenn Frey, but, you know, he obviously was a very successful individual. And
yeah, and he had a huge cultural moment, you know, with Miami Vice, and it's, for anyone alive in 84, 85, or whenever it was.
Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack or whatever.
You know, he that was huge. I mean, he was the guy, which, you know, at the time it was kind of nice to see someone be successful in their solo career. Not that he wasn't already rich from the Eagles, but, you know, it's nice when people try something new and it works. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. You know, you're saying nice things.
I'm trying to stay positive.
You really are. But yeah, lots of, you know, and then obviously, you know, plenty of other craziness happened this year, not the least of which is, you know, our president-elect.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
what do you think his we have no way of knowing, I'm sure it's terrible, but what do you think Donald Trump top three records of 2016?
2016. Well, we know it's not Beyonce.
Yeah.
Did Steven Seagal have an album out this year?
That's very close to what I was going to say. Is what about did Garth Brooks do a record this year?
He might have. I've been seeing him on TV.
Garth Brooks. What do you think, that Motley Crue thing was real? And Vince Neil was saying he's playing the inauguration or something.
He said that, but then
I guess
not.
The Crue didn't do a record, did they?
No.
Third time.
Wow, it's Hugzilla here.
Okay, now you need to
Hugapalooza.
Yeah.
So I need the iPad.
Okay, we'll grab it.
I think they're not. He's not playing the inaugural now.
Yeah.
I just read that. Nobody wants to play it.
Yeah, I also
like.
Read
I think
that
Nugent,
a runner up from American Idol or something.
Nugent and like Kid Rock are like the only ones who are probably
did Kid Rock do a record this year?
I don't know. He would
be in the top three Donald Trump records.
Probably.
Aren't you guys glad you tuned in?
Yeah, this is really topical, man. I mean, we're really hitting it off.
We're talking the guy you hate the most. What music he would like? That's like the greatest podcast ever.
I think it is. Yeah, fuck that guy. Anyways, you know, speaking of him, though, I am interested to see if his term results in any kind of you know, return to protest music. If, you know, because we kind of have seen that die down. I think we remarked on that last year that
I feel like I talk about
there is no protest every music anymore. Or at least, you know, there's a small portion of it, but like, you know, I'd be interested to see.
I've already seen, like, the, you know, I don't know if it was Consequence of Sound or someone, but, you know, people are already positing, you know, that there will be a return of, you know, like, hardcore punk and, you know, political hardcore punk and...
Well, you look at what, you know, birthed punk and hardcore, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, Thatcher regime, the Reagan years, certainly the gave birth to a lot of...
Reagan youth,
a lot of bands, I mean, so, you know, maybe... You know, it's a small thing to hope for in, you know, what could be a shitty time for some people, but...
Yeah, well, and you never, you know, take a... Just take a quick analytical take on that. You know, would those bands have formed anyway, but maybe the tone and tenor of the content would have been different. Like, I don't know if the need to protest necessarily creates bands so much as it... gives bands that would already be forming something to voice.
Well, yeah, and you know, 3 days after the election, I went to the Sinclair in Harvard Square to see Jeff Rosenstock, who I will be talking about again in my rundown on my favorite albums. And, you know, a fair amount of that show was them kind of talking from the stage about how upset they are about, you know, Trump and, you know, urging people to, you know, be politically active and, you know, sign petitions and kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, their rights aren't marginalized, you know, in any way. And, you know, like, it was, the crowd, which was like, you know, me, old dude, and like pretty much everybody else was in their early 20s, you know, was totally like on board. So, I mean, you know, you've got, you know, there's definitely like a whole generation of artists who, you know, maybe weren't politically active before, but, you know, might become so now.
Yeah, this is jumping yet further away from any topic of meaning. But did you watch any, I think it was on HBO or something, but then they replayed it afterwards on the regular television, the Colbert Live Election Night episode.
It was on Showtime, but yeah.
Yeah, Showtime, and then they
I've been meaning to watch that, actually.
It's worth watching. It's not enjoyable, but it's very real.
Because, like, as the night goes on, they kind of realize that he's going to win.
And they did not prepare
at all. And they weren't expecting that. I don't think anybody...
They were shocked.
I don't think
they
were, certainly, like, Trump didn't expect to win.
No, like, no.
You know, they were... You know, there's stories about how, like, you know... When they got to sort of the transition team, or like his people got to the White House,
they
needed a transition team because they didn't realize, you know, how. First of all, they didn't think they were going to win.
They asked how many of the people would stay on.
And they're like, "You hire everybody,
you are a jackass."
Yeah. So interesting, right. But yeah, I imagine I've been meaning to watch that. I think part of me didn't want to because they thought it would be kind of painful.
Yeah, it's painful, but it's very, you know, as a student of the television, I know you've, you know, it's interesting to see just the realness of it, where, you know, they are shell-shocked, tearful, you know, it seems like at times, like just pouring out giant doubles of whiskey and like, so, you know. So there you go. Let's resolve to try not to bring too much more of Donald into this episode. Yeah. Let's move on.
We'll move on. Well, I guess before we get into, you know, our favorite music of the year, what were some sort of trends or things that you noticed about this year that you found interesting?
That's a good question. I know we talk about
That's why I asked it.
Yeah. Well, we talk about it every year, and I'm trying to.
Other than death, which is a huge trend.
Yeah, and constant, you know, and in truth, a constant of life. I can't think of, you know, I'll struggle for examples, but, you know, I feel like the bands reforming, you know, that seems to have the, you know, the you know, the touring, the 20-year anniversary of whatever record, you know, the band's reforming American football, you know, just, yeah. You know.
I've been laughing at, like, I've been seeing retrospectives of albums that came out, like, 5 years ago. It's like, really? Yeah. You guys have that little to write about? You're gonna, like, yeah. You're like, oh, it's 5 years ago, this album came out. I was like, Jesus, dude. Like, you know, Stereo Gum in some of these places are just like, yeah. Like, wow, they must be, next it's going to be 1 year, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think from a product standpoint, we're seeing a lot of that because they know this physical product is really, really doomed. You know, I think it's definitely going to go down to a very hardcore music fans market, you know, where, and I think music as a service, as foreseen 16 years ago by the great minds at webnoise.com
which doesn't exist, so don't bother looking for
it's become a reality that has really become a way of life. I mean, I have it in the house. I'm not using it, but I've got the Amazon Echo units, one in the kitchen, one in the living room, and I did just recently pay for the you know, the add-on service, so that,
sure, how to help you with that.
Yeah, can it, lady? That was her talking to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
you rang, master.
Yeah, I.
It's I Dream of Jeannie all over again.
Yeah, I wish. Ah, oh, man, it'd be great to get her voice. So anyway, the If for the listeners who don't know, it's, you know, it's a speaker and,
voice activated.
A microphone, and it's voice activated. And what I love, and what you know, it was just a bullseye for me in terms of the service that's designed right for me. You think of something and you just call it out and you say the name of the product and you say play blah 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 and they play it. So that, you know, initially my the service was just set up to ping the 30,000 MP3s I had uploaded. But, you know, there are, you know, new releases or whatever, you know, things that I didn't have, you know, you could ask for it and they'd be like, yeah, no, you know, we don't have that. So, you know, for an extra $7 a month, you can do the add-on subscription for the, you know, Amazon Unlimited.
Uh-huh.
And so now I can basically say any record and they'll play it.
Anything that's streaming.
Yeah, anything that they have a license to or the rights to. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of work and et cetera. And so, like, my, you know, $8 a month is a small price to pay to not be stymied occasionally when I want to listen to, you know, Van Halen, Women and Children First or some such.
Sure.
So
Torah, Torah.
So anyway, we were talking about something. And then we
were talking about trends. I mean, yeah.
Well, I guess hardware, you know, the voice activated.
Yeah.
I guess that's not hardware, that's software. But, you know, at least in this house, the hardware.
But
is
I've seen a lot of ads for the Google version of that. And certainly,
I saw that in the wild at a friend's house. And,
you got Apple TV and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you can. Or Siri. Does Siri do that too? No, or is that just through the phone?
They must have an iPad for the Siri. But
they don't have like a.
They do
wireless thing.
I don't know that Apple does. I mean, I don't know if Siri interacts with the Apple TV. You can bet that if they don't have it, it's cause there.
Because the Amazon Echo is based on that, right? I mean,
it's based on.
I mean, it's sort of ripping it off and making it better.
Yeah, it's ripping it off. There's something called, and I can say it in this room because I changed the name of this room. There's something called the Alexa service,
right.
which existed apart from
the Amazon hardware.
I think they licensed it.
They licensed it, okay.
But it's a long standing.
Because it's in their commercials now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it actually started off as a, like a, what's the word? You know, like a website rankings thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like, oh, well, what's your Alexa ranking? What's this, you know? And it was like a web page rank. And I feel like that was how I first was exposed to it. But obviously they morphed when ranking blog traffic became, when everybody realized that was the dumbest fucking thing that you could spend your time doing. So did I get 23 hits this week or did I get 27 hits this week?
Well, you know, while you've kind of got that, you know, the whole Celestial Jukebox thing, vinyl is still surging. Like, yep. There was just a thing out of the UK a couple weeks ago where vinyl outsold downloads.
Yep.
Which is kind of insane. You know, and certainly things like, you know, Record Store Day, which I think is twice a year now, and just, you know, there's a lot of people dropping big coin on vinyl, mm-hmm. you know, almost to a silly effect. I mean, you know, people are paying like, you know, $40 for, you know,
yeah,
for,
and
you know, colored vinyl, but
for a lot, it's the, you know, the rag on CDs was, well, they're just making you buy, and I guess cassettes.
The same thing.
They're just making you buy in a new format again, right. And I am sure, I haven't done it a lot, but I am sure that there's stuff that I've bought on LP more than once at this point. Maybe I haven't. I mean, I was thinking Journey's Escape, but the copy of Escape I have is your copy.
That's
of
mine.
Escape, so I can buy that. And actually, I think the copy I had when I was a kid, I think that was Tito's. So, terrible example. But I think there's, you know, there's...
Well, you've got, I mean, you've got all the reissues now, too. So that,
right.
That seems to be, like, the only way bands are making money, especially older established bands like Led Zeppelin. Well, I mean, they, you know, all their stuff sells anyways.
Those poor bastards in Led Zeppelin with their no money.
But they keep, they reissued all their albums. I know,
yeah,
like, you know, basically, like, any band that's got control of its... rights, unlike, you know, say Husker Du,
right?
All which I would love to buy reissues of because they're old.
That's
stuff
just a matter
shit.
Of time. I mean,
Greg Ginn, right? So he's got to break his legs, but
yeah.
But I mean, there's just like every time you turn around, there's like a new box set or reissue. You know,
yeah, there's this new huge Pink Floyd thing.
That's like hundreds of dollars, though, isn't it?
I mean, I would love to have it, but you know, I think there's not. I imagine there's a substantial amount of stuff that I don't have, but it's not so substantial that I'm gonna like spend $250 on whatever that this thing is. But I heard a tune from you know, one of the early Pink Floyd records that I really like, which is generally available. And now actually those have been reissued on vinyl.
Yeah.
And hopefully Santa will bring me some. But you know, it's on WMBR yesterday morning. I think they. Played Cymbeline from More, which is one of my favorite Pink Floyd records, and you know, they said it was the remaster, and yeah, it sounded great, sounded incredible. So I don't know, there's something to be said for it.
Yeah, I mean, generally, you know, I buy vinyl, but I'm not like obsessed by it. So it's, you know, I'll just buy it if I think it's a good price, and you know, it's something. Usually, it's I'll get it if it's something I don't have already.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's for me. Sometimes I just buy it to support the artist.
Like, right. I'll buy it at shows.
Yeah,
definitely
like, that.
It's cheaper than anyways. But
you know, they did Rocket Ship reissued its 1996 record, A Certain Smile, A Certain Sadness this year. Did I need it? I might have needed it, but also just, you know, I want to, you know, in a way thank them for my enjoyment of the music for the last 20 years and. Also make them feel like, you know, it was a good decision to make. So sometimes I just buy the record to support the band without even thinking about the music because, you know, chances are I've got the music in six different formats anyway.
Right.
On the old data play disc.
Data play. Well, and, you know, another thing is, like, I've been supporting more kind of Kickstarter pledge music kind of things, like, Buffalo Tom just came out with a pledge music effort for they're making their next album. I think it sold out in like a week.
Yeah, I saw it did really,
and I
really
jumped on that. Just, you know, and I you know, did the thing where you get the vinyl and the download. You know,
yeah.
I did that with Tommy Stinson's new album, and you know, I think I did it with the Last Pile record. You know, so
yeah, Tommy Stinson's coming and playing at O'Brien's. I think,
is he?
Ooh, I'd like to go I that. Think in like February maybe. That's bonkers.
Yeah. So, you know, I like that kind of stuff where like you can kind of help an artist and then obviously you get something in return, but you know, like actually with speaking of Pile, a couple years ago their van broke down.
Right.
And they started like a Kickstarter or a pledge music or something like that to basically, I don't know, get a new van or fix their old van. And you could, you know, you could get like, you know, the new record coming out, you know, as part of like one of the rewards. So I kicked in like $30 or something.
Well, yeah, and merch as a way to support the artists is as old as time. But yeah. I remember probably 10 years ago when Voxtrot was a a popular act before they made their bad records. But the first two EPs are incredible, and you know, they their van either broke or got stolen or something, and they're out on tour, and they did like an immediate, I think it was to MySpace, like they did a relatively immediate, like, you know, SOS on MySpace saying, you know, we're stuck in Arkansas, and can you buy some shirts? So I bought a shirt, and you know, enjoyed it for a while, my shirt. I think it was too small when I got it, so I didn't give it too much wear. But anyway, that's the story of my Voxtrot shirt.
Sure. But I guess what we're saying is, you know, album sales per se are kind of in the toilet. But
yeah.
Although I have seen a lot of think pieces saying that, like, albums are back, which I think means more like, you know, people are paying a little more attention to them. They're not necessarily, you know, buying them because they're listening to them on things like Spotify, but
yeah.
But I mean, you know,
I think that's maybe
they never went away for me,
but. Right? They never went away for me. They never went away for you. But I think maybe that story, as a you know, as something we're seeing, maybe is inspired by, I'll use the term thought leader, people like Kanye, people like
Beyonce,
Frank Ocean, Beyonce. None of whom I couldn't tell you what any of their new records sound like, but right. They are, you know, high concept album dealies, and the fact that the releases have been high profile and have been discussed as whole
and
cloth, I think maybe
and have kind of come sort of outside the traditional album release thing where it's like announced, you know, 6 months in advance and there's a single and there's a, you know, like Beyonce, I want to say either the last two albums maybe, I've basically just kind of been like the last
fell
one
out of the sky.
The last one was like a video. I almost think she released a video for every song.
Yeah.
And that was the album release, and then it was sold physically.
Yeah.
And I think Kanye might have been the same way maybe.
And again, I don't know a whole lot about this, but I read an article or two that I think the Frank Ocean, he released via a major label a video album and then pissed them off immediately. He did that like on Friday, and on the following Monday, he released a completely different album.
That's right.
On through, you know, basically self-released it. And they were both apparently great. Universal was totally pissed because they feel like they ultimately got played to, you know,
promote
his self-release, where he probably made a gajillion dollars, because, you know, instead of getting you know, he probably had a high royalty maybe negotiated.
I wonder
$2
like,
or something on a.
How does a doesn't a contract like prevent that? I wonder like if
that's the thing. The article said it actually there was a loophole, and they think he knew it, and they think someone told him, someone, a name you would know, and I don't know if that was, you know, I don't even know, someone.
Al Jarreau.
I was thinking like Steve Jobs, but obviously he's dead. But someone sort of, I think, outside the fold, but, you know, still a celebrity, but maybe not someone directly.
Said, hey, ask for this or something like that.
Or said, hey, you know what, you could do this because I bet your deal doesn't preclude it. And so he did it. So, you know, maybe it was Rick Rubin. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, let's blame Rick Rubin.
Sure. That guy's good.
Yeah, he should shave.
Put some shoes on too,
yeah,
man.
Get a new brand, Rick. Rubin.
Come on, man.
Rick.
Rick,
really. New brand, Rick.
What, I guess sort of, you know, from your vantage point, we don't necessarily talk about the industry at large. You know, what was your take on live music this year? I mean, I know you've been busy and haven't gone as many shows as you would have liked.
Very few, but I don't feel like it's suffering. Like, I feel like maybe there's been a plateau where I mean, you know, maybe it's because there wasn't a huge venue closing this year, at least in the Boston market. I mean, that was all last year's stuff, yeah. Right? But, you know, I feel like more people are talking about going to shows, more people are going to shows. Generally, I feel like the live market is, at least regionally here, is strong. There's a constant turnover. You know, Facebook, I feel like every month there's, you know, some, you know, sort of quasi-tell-all or veiled statement by a booker about, well, I'm no longer booking here because of blah, blah, blah. I saw one today.
Oh, really?
From the guy, Jason Trefts, maybe, who was doing the Upstairs in the Middle East, and mm-hmm. he said, you know, starting now or at some point I'm not doing it. They raised the room fee for the independent promoters so that it's like, you know, $500 or $700 a night, which is preposterous.
For such a small space, too.
Yeah, I mean, the venue does have cachet. It's probably the most known venue in the, you know, the most storied venue anyway in the market.
Left, but, yeah. Well, that in the Paradise, I guess.
But, yeah, but the... you know, I can tell you from working with them that, and sure, the scale is different, but, you know, you always want to have the right size venue and the right economics to make your event work. We did this show last week, which you were kind enough to attend, which was a benefit for
Toys
for
Toys 3.
It was a, you know, the show over-delivered on all of my hopes and expectations.
That was
so
awesome.
That was great, but the room cost is $100.
It was at O'Brien's in Austin.
Yeah, the
cool little
room costs $100, and I remember interviewing Rick from Pyle for the Phoenix, RIP, and him saying that they loved O'Brien's, they loved bringing their touring band friends into O'Brien's and playing there because, you know, the scale was right. You could really fill the room. And at the time when I did the interview, he was like, $70. You know, the room fee, $70. And then none of the, you know, they wouldn't take a cut. And none of the other local bands would take a cut. And they would just give all the money to the touring act and they'd do really well. Touring act or acts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a sweet spot, and I guess, you know, depending on who you are and what sort of operation you have, everybody's sweet spot's different. You know, Ride is not going to play at O'Brien's.
Right.
Ride's sweet spot is very clearly the Paradise, which is, I think, a 900 or so capacity. Is that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the O'Brien's might be 150 or something.
Right.
But, you know, you'd rather have 150... people in O'Brien's and have the place totally shaking instead of having 100 people in
House of Blues.
Yeah, in the House of Blues. And the House of Blues, you know, the room cost there is probably a couple grand, you know.
Well, you know, definitely seeing like a lot more, you know, so-called name acts playing places like Great Scott,
mm-hmm.
Brighton Music Hall, you know, places that are, you know, sort of small. Like, I saw X at Brighton Music Hall, which, you know, it's not a big, like, that, what's that, like, 500? What's that?
Yeah, that sounds 350? About right. I used to know, because my friend Scott played there.
400? I don't know, but it's small. But, yeah. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, I think you can, if you're, like, a band touring, and you're not necessarily, like, on a, you know, major tour, you can make some decent cash, like, playing a place like that, selling a mm-hmm. shitload of merch. You know, you get, you know, like that X show was full. I saw Sloan there at Brighton Music Hall. That was full.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I would think that would be a lot more fun for a band touring than, you know, going to like some hall and it, you know, it being kind of cavernous and, you know.
Yeah, I don't think,
you know,
anybody.
It's only full on the floor and, you know, so.
But I wonder if they would care as much about playing to a place that is, you know, only 20% full if that also at the same time wasn't hurting them economically.
Sure.
You know, if they had a guarantee. maybe, you know. If
yeah,
if they
but
got
I think
a lot of
bands don't have that anymore, yeah. And they're relying more on merch sales to make money because, you know, their records don't sell that well. They're not on a major label, you know, whatever.
Well, and then there's all this ridiculous, like, luxury tier stuff for, like, I don't even remember who they are, but there are certain huge bands where
packages,
you could, like, where you'd be, like,
meet and greet,
VIP section, you could sit on this behind the stage, you know, blah, 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 for an extra blah, blah,
and
blah.
Those things are, like, it's funny, like, people will pay, like, you know, $500 to meet a, you know, go backstage or go to like a certain area, meet a band for like, you know, 5 minutes, get an autograph, like say hi, and that's it, you know? Like,
yeah. And
people like, I don't get that at all. Like,
because you know, the band is like, this is just an obligation to them. It's not like you're their best friend.
Right. And I've never, you know, I don't know about you, but like, I mean, I've met plenty of, you know, people in bands and, you know, it's just like, if you're awestruck, you know, what do you get? What kind of a conversation you can have? Like, I don't get the allure. Like, there's times where like people are like wanting to wait around to like, you know, see to meet the band after. I'm like, I don't need to meet them. What am I going to say to them? You know, thanks. That's all I got. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if you met them
in a bar, you know, like you're just like bump into somebody.
Yeah, then it's like a real interaction. But otherwise, it's sort of this,
forced, you know, conversation.
Yeah, and you know that they probably have a lot of other stuff that they need to be doing.
Or you turn into like comic book guy and like, you know, well, on track 7 of your fourth album, what did you mean by?
Why did you go with woodblock instead of?
I can't get no satisfaction.
Yes.
So you know, I just. But there are people who will pay, you know, like, I heard on this podcast talking about, like, you know, Pat Benatar does these things where, like, you know.
Please, I think you now have to say Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo.
Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo, husband and wife team, or wife and husband team. But, like, you know, I don't necessarily think she's a jerk to her fans, but it's just, like, people will pay, you know. And even, like, say we were talking about Tommy Stinson.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the a Pledge Music thing for his upcoming record, and like, you know, I think if it's like you can pay like there's one thing where I don't know if it's like 10 grand or how much it is, but like they'll literally come and play at your house.
Yeah,
his band. You know, I mean, you know, and I guess you know. There's another one where like I forget how much it is, but you can get like. Pieces of like one of his basses that are just like a chunk of his bass for like $50
piece of the Berlin Wall.
Like, what the? But I don't know. I don't get that. But I mean, I certainly welcome bands doing this kind of stuff to you know make money any way they can. Just like you know, I'm less aggravated by bands licensing their music to TV shows and movies and commercials because they got to make money. Like. Lemonheads have a song in a car commercial now, in a Volkswagen commercial. It's getting a lot of play. It's their cover of Zero My Hero.
Yeah, you know what? I was just about to ask if that's what it was, because I hear it, and it obviously sounds like Evan Dando.
Right, I remember hearing it the first time. I'm like, holy shit, is that Dando?
And I've never it confirmed it, so...
Yeah, no, it's them. It's, is it a Schoolhouse Rock song or something like that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's in a major Volkswagen campaign right now, you know... You know, I don't know if it's going to get as much play as, you know, Eminence Front and, like, for The Who and, like, every Cadillac commercial or whatever that's in, but I think it's been, like, 2 years now of Eminence Front showing up in commercials, like, nonstop during football games. But, you know what?
Bands... It's a really good song, and it's surprising that it is embraced in an advertising campaign.
Right.
Because I don't feel like it is a hit.
Right. No, it's definitely not a hit.
But...
I had never heard it before.
You've never heard Eminence Front?
No. I thought you were talking about the Lemonhead song.
No, about Eminence
Front. No, Eminence Front. I love that song.
Yeah. I love that song too, but that's not like if you ask.
It's a classic rock hit
in a radio sense.
You'll hear it like on a Sunday afternoon during a rock block in between like Who Are You and Don't Get Fooled Again. But
I feel like if you walk up on the street and you ask people to name their first 20 their 20 favorite Who songs, I don't think Eminence Front.
It's a good. I mean, it's kind of good bed music almost. Like
yeah.
You know, the part that they play before it kicks in.
Yeah.
But You know, yeah, it's an interesting choice. You know, as opposed to a few years ago, Bargain was in car commercials for a while because for obvious reasons. And yeah. Like, I remember just like the thing with car commercials is like you see them and hear them all the time. So like after a while, you're just sick of the song. But it's good money, I guess. So
yeah, take the money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess let's, we could probably, stand to, grab a couple more beers and, get started on our favorite music of the year.
That sounds like a good idea.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we are back.
Hello.
Armed with, fresh beer.
Fresh beer. Who do we have in the,
I got a, Sierra Nevada Celebration IPA.
It's an annual,
one of my favorite holiday beers.
Yeah, they bring that one back every year, I always enjoy seeing it hit the stores.
It is tasty.
Indeed. So we listen to records this year sometimes.
Let's,
some of them were good.
Let's talk about them.
Let's talk about
them. What were some of your favorites? Before we traditionally do like a top 10 and then sort of
And others.
I actually, you know, this year I have a lot on my list that I considered. You know, obviously I have a top 10, but I thought it was a pretty good year for music. There were a lot more. Maybe I don't know if I was listening to more music or what, but what are some of yours that you enjoy but didn't quite make your top 10?
Well, obviously we did the half year, and there's some stuff that was on the half year list that didn't graduate to the full year list that I see here. You know, I listened to them, and I stopped listening to them, and the other new records came along, and especially in the latter half of the year where I was really. Working like a dog, and so I'm working like a dog. I was doing a lot of...
You're a working class dog person.
Yeah, working class dog, me and Rick, and the dog on the album cover. You know, so I was listening to a lot of ambient, a lot of jazz, a lot of electronic, a lot of stuff that...
Dubstep?
Not dubstep, but a lot of stuff I could put on that was not overly engaging and sometimes relaxing. One thing, and we spoke about this last week or the week before... One thing I really like right now is the Mixcloud that posts old John Peel radio shows.
Oh yeah, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Mixcloud's pretty cool,
and it's such a sweet spot for music because it's just shows from 1990, or at least those are the ones I'm listening to right now.
That Teenage Fan Club.
But it's such a
The whole right around the Manchester stuff.
Yeah, there's that's in there, but it's really the mix of things that makes it so great. There's the Manchester stuff, shoegaze stuff.
Yeah.
He plays a lot of American hip-hop, like P.E., Poor Righteous Teachers.
Damn.
Like, and hip-hop at that time was, like, as great as it ever will be, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then he plays a lot of, like, African High Life, which I really enjoy. Hmm. And then, you know, because it's England, you know, they acknowledge, you know, sort of the, you know, dub and reggae stuff, too. And so every show is, you know, it's in the spring of 1990. Every show is, you know, this awesome mix of, conscious hip-hop and shoegaze and then he's, like, obsessed with anything Steve Albini has produced, he's got on. So it's like, you know, the last show I listened to is, you know, it's like, there's a new Tad single.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, that's
I gotta check that shit out.
I've been listening to things for comfort. But as far as the albums that I'll just rattle off a few things in the first half of the year that I was very excited about that are still great, but that didn't make the year-end list. I really liked the record by the, I think, Austin, Texas, kind of glam rock act, a giant dog called Pyle.
Yeah,
which we discussed at the mid-year. The Philadelphia kind of emo punk band Thin Lips, they did a record on Lamo called Riff Hard, which is terrific.
Excellent record.
Bench Shapes, Wolves of Want on Slumberland, local band making good, getting released on my favorite label. And Dives is the Izar. This one came very close to making my year-end list. It's probably the last one that I booted off was Pine Grove, the kind of Americana-tinged emo act. I think they're from Jersey, and they put out a record called Cardinal that's terrific, that's actually showing up in a lot of pretty well-established year-end lists. They really they really made a special record. So that's the stuff from my mid-year list that didn't make it. A couple other things that I think were honorable mentions to the mid-year, and these guys just played a really important show for them. They were, I think it was at the Royale. They just opened for, I don't even remember who, but Horse Jumper of Love.
Oh, yeah.
Is kind of a Boston, a slowcore act who are terrific, and who played on a Clicky Clicky Bill at the Together Festival, I think in May. I assume it was this year. It could have been last year. I don't know. Hard to separate the years anymore. Guillermo Sexo's Eclipse at the beginning of the year, which I had, you know, sitting around. I had that in my computer for a long time, and which ultimately was their swan song. It was a terrific record. The mastermind behind the band moved to Georgia, and so they
Georgia
decommissioned the band. But and then Your Poetry, which is Alexi and Junior from Johnny Foreigner, did an EP called Rocket Season under their Your Poetry moniker, which I liked. And can't remember what the guy's from. The guy was like a sideman in Aztec Camera or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But California Snow Story is the name of the act. They released a record, their first in 10 years. I kind of thought they were, you know, they had come and gone, but I guess they're back for another go at it. And, you know, it's very kind of Sarah Records-styled indie pop. And they did a long player called Some Other Places. So those are all notable. What of yours didn't quite make the final cut, if you will?
Sure. Let's see. Used Cassettes, Rockin' Reels. These guys are... I want to say they're American, but they're based out of Seoul, Korea for some reason. I don't know why. But
kind of the long way around.
Yeah, but they're really good. They kind of they definitely have like kind of a Pavement sound to them. Good, really strong record. One that made my mid-year list was Savages, Adore Life. Excellent record. I want to say it was Jim DeRogatis' number one of the year. I saw them live. Incredible show, great album. Dinosaur Jr., Give a Glimpse of What You're Not. You know, I think like right now they're kind of in a spot where like, you know, they just crank out solid records.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, they're definitely. I feel like they're kind of maintaining. One of my deep darkest secrets is, I'm a huge Dinosaur fan. I don't know if I've listened to that entire record yet.
It's good.
Yeah, it's on my Christmas list, and I'm hoping that Santa brings the LP.
So it's I really like it. I like it more than the one before it.
Yeah.
So, the Lou songs are really good. It's
gotta love the Lou.
Yeah. Radiohead, Moonshaped Pool.
Yeah.
Actually, I was just listening to it on the way here. You know, little less bleep lorpy than their last couple of records, but you know, I think it's very informed by Tom York's his marriage broke up after like 23 years or something like that. So
yeah.
You know, definitely some melancholy. That's a kind of a theme that seems to come back in the albums that really kind of hit me this year. Is sort of that gut-wrenching melancholy feel. There's several records that...
That's one of the reasons why I don't listen to that record that much.
It's tough. It's a tough listen.
It's beautiful sounding.
Yeah.
You know, I need... I've got my own worries. You know?
Sure. I get it.
I'm looking for escape. That said, I bought, you know, as soon as they announced it, I bought the LP.
Mm-hmm.
I moved the records off the thing back here, so I can't refer to them because we were having some painting done. But if we were laying on the floor in there, staring at the ceiling,
they're all glued to the ceiling.
Yeah, they're under the buffet. But I sprung for the LP, and I'm glad I did.
Let's see.
A lot of that record, just before we let it go, a lot of the Moonshaped Pool. I remember people initially were down on it because a lot of the songs were old, but you know, I don't care.
They're good.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, but I guess if you were like an Uber fan...
Oh, you'd heard them already.
You had heard them or at least knew they existed. So, whatever.
Nerds!
You know, yeah, exactly.
Shut up, nerds!
Shut up, nerds.
couple more. Split single, Metal Frames. It's Jason Narduzzi, who's you know,
hardest working bass player in show business.
Yep, plays playing bass in the Bob Mould Band, and you know, this is sort of his side project that he works on. He recorded this with John Sturrott of Wilco on bass and John Worster on drums, and he played you know, wrote all the songs, played the guitars. And the last album, last split single record a couple years ago had Britt Daniel on bass of Spoon and Worster. So, you know, obviously he's got a lot of you know, he's played with, you know, he's been playing with Superchunk too as their touring bass player now that Laura Ballas doesn't tour anymore. So, but yeah, you know, just like great kind of power pop, you know, punk slash punk songs. You know, real, just, you know, tons of energy. He's a good dude, and you know, that was another one where they did a Kickstarter or Pledge Music or something, and I, you know, kicked in for that. But
he's just a guy you want to succeed.
Yeah, you know, this is a guy who started in the industry when he was like 10.
Yeah,
you know, he had a band when he was like, you know, like a punk band when he was like 10 years old, and you know, and it kind of got noticed by people, and you know, he's just been playing like ever since, and you know, just a good guy. You know, he's a good player. You know, and yeah. You know, I love supporting, you know, people like that who are still doing it. So, Preoccupations, which is the
we'll be talking about that one again later.
Okay, we'll save it for discussion for them. But that's the artist formerly known as Viet Cong.
Yeah.
Descendants came back with a new album, Hyper Caffeine's 2008. It's awesome.
Yeah, that record's great.
We saw them play in Boston. Mm-hmm. Great, it was an awesome show. Yeah. It's just like so much freaking energy from, you know, dudes in their 50s and whatever.
Right, and they've got the songs. I think what makes them a lasting act, what makes them a band that sold out Royale in the year 2016 is they just have the great songs.
Mm. Yeah, and just a real, you know, real potent. I mean, you know, Bill Stevenson just still sounds awesome on drums. I mean, they're just, you know, They just got it, you know.
Yeah.
Every record they put out has been endlessly entertaining. One that I know is on your list, but I will mention it because it's on my honorable mention, is Johnny Foreigner's
Model record. We'll certainly be talking about that.
Terry Maltz, Lost at the Party.
Yeah.
This is a. I don't know a whole lot about them, but you know, it was sort of one that, you know, doing my radio show, I got a copy of this, and it's. You know,
I get Terry Maltz and the other Slumberland act that released something about the same time mixed up.
Able Body or
no?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's this this I'm looking at the cover. This record is great.
Yeah,
I listen to this Terry Maltz record a lot.
It's yeah, it's Lost at the Party is the record. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's really solid, front to back. It's
it's kind of got like a slight new wave flavor.
Yeah,
but you know, it's upbeat.
Yeah, real punchy songs. Like you know, there's not a bad one in the bunch.
Yeah. Wow, that was that. I'm looking at the notes here. I can't believe that release date was October 14th.
Yeah.
Because
I got it a little early, but
yeah, I got it early too. But I feel like
been out for a while.
I just feel like October 14th was a long time ago.
You see, it's almost exactly 2 months ago.
Yeah,
and then people will hear this 2 weeks from now. So. Mm-hmm.
Happy New Year!
Yeah, pretty much. Couple more. I think we're listening to it now. Hallelujah the Hills. Band is something to figure out.
We'll be talking about that one.
Another excellent record from. Mr. Walsh.
Yeah, I believe they might be playing a show right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it's not tonight, it's tomorrow night.
Yeah. The I Don't Cares, Wild Stab, which I, you know, had on my mid-year list, which was Paul Westerberg and Juliana Hatfield.
I listened to that. That was one of the, I listened to that a lot on my Amazon device in the kitchen at the beginning of the year.
There's a couple that came out in the last... little while that I haven't had a whole lot of chance to listen to that I would probably be on my list if I had
the time to cure.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Skeleton Tree.
Yeah. Another, I didn't realize that was already out.
It came out probably a month ago, maybe a little more than that. And this was sort of written. He had a 15-year-old son who died. He was like rock climbing, literally fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, very informed by that. It's a very you know, gut wrenching album, like I was mentioning earlier. Yeah. You know, it's another one of those ones where you know you're not gonna crank that up if you're looking to, you know.
Yeah, it's not Freedom Rock.
It's not. Yeah, it's not Van Halen 2 or anything, but. It's excellent. I need to listen to it more, but he's an intense dude. I mean, you know,
he's already.
The previous album wasn't like a fun fest either. But,
no, the guy comes from a dark, you know, works from a dark place. So.
Yeah. Another one is Gord Downie, Secret Path, and this is
Speaking of hard records, you know, this is a guy who's dying, right?
This is a guy who's dying. This was recorded before he found out, I think, but. This is about, this is a project actually, it's a multimedia project, because he recorded this album, and the illustrator Jeff Lemire, who is like he's a big name in comics.
If you say so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our mutual friend Mr. Searles can attest to that.
I'll tag in for Mr. Searles, we'll just overdub him.
But
seconds of color on Lemire, Mr. Searles.
But this is about the story is about a native Canadian kid, I think he was like 8 years
like
old.
What do they call it in Canada? The original nations or something?
Yeah, First Nation. And it happened in the early 60s. A true story. It happened in the early 60s, where I think for decades before that. The Canadian government was taking these kids, First Nation kids, from their families and putting them in schools.
Yeah.
To kind of Canadianize them or Americanize them or whatever. So
yeah, and that happens in the United States too. But so
the kid was separated from his family. He was taken hundreds of miles away, and he basically ran away from the school he was in and went to walk home. But he didn't realize he was 800 miles away, and it was in the middle of the winter, and he had literally
a long walk.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the story of this kid who, he ended up dying on the way. But
jeez.
But you know, Downie, you know, mentioned one of his big things actually. Like, for a little background, if you don't know who he is, he's the singer of the Tragically Hip, big Canadian band, he found out. Late last year that he had terminal brain cancer. So they did a tour in the summertime. They announced it in June. They did a 10 city tour in Canada. It was just the last show was broadcast across Canada and to the world, and it was just speaking of gut wrenching, it's gotten to the point where he can still, he still can sing, and obviously he's got all his faculties, but his short-term memory isn't great, so, he's had to kind of rely on stage monitors, in the past, the dude's just, he's super smart, but he sort of played this thing, but then, a month later, that was in July, I think, or August, he announced this project, and it was... during that show, one of the things he was saying was that, they've got to do right by, the First Nation people the Canadian government's got to, really make things right, because they really, did a number on these folks, just like happened in America.
Yeah, there's just related to First Nations. I think it was this year, there was all that reporting, just horrible reporting about, the reporting was great and important, but stories about just the... what's the word? The epidemic isn't the word, but the epidemic of just women that disappear out of First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And, how they're being funneled into human trafficking and just the terrible things that happen to them. And there definitely is a lot more work that can be done to give those people the support they need. And pumping them into the pipeline of human trafficking is one of those things.
Well, and then, speaking of pipelines... in the U.S., we had the whole Standing Rock situation where, this massive gas pipeline. This was gas, right? Oil pipeline was supposed to be, go right through like kind of Native American land, and you know.
And anybody who's seen Poltergeist knows how this is going to end.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. But there was this huge protest that went on for
Craig T. Nelson.
That's right. That went on for like months, and it literally just kind of ended because. You know, the government basically said they weren't going to go through there, but
yeah,
you know, not before, you know, police like were spraying, you know, these protesters. It was like, you know, sub-zero freezing temperatures out there, and they're spraying them with fire hoses, and these poor people are freezing. And, you know, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
It was a bad look, but so you know, this shit's going on obviously, in, you know, on multiple fronts. But Downey's whole thing was like, you know, bringing attention to this, and this story. Was featured in Maclean's magazine, which is kind of like the Time magazine of Canada.
Yeah.
In like when he was a kid, he read it like in the late 60s, just sort of like profiled this kid called, his name is Charlie Winjack. And so this story, this album, Secret Path, is sort of tells the story of this kid who, you know, as he leaves the school, the reservation school, and kind of, you know, tries to get back to his family. And then, you know, it's accompanied by this really awesome book. It's basically a graphic novel. It's huge. It's almost like record-sized, which I just got in the mail today, so I haven't even had a chance to read it. But it's, I was watching. And they made, like, an animated movie that they a short film that they released along, you know, when they premiered it. And actually, Downey played, I think, two shows for the release of this. But, I was watching some of it on YouTube last night, and I was just like, holy crap, it was so sad.
Yeah.
But it's really good. Another recently, like in the last 3 weeks, album that I got that I have been enjoying is Kristen Hirsch's Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. She has a book, and she released a double album to go along with it. Actually, like, it's released by Omnibus Press, the publisher. So it's kind of a different approach. But it's pretty much all acoustic. But it's kind of based. It's about her son, you know, I'm not sure if he's autistic or what the exact story is. But it's really good. I mean, obviously, I haven't listened to it a whole lot, but I really like. You know, I mean, she's actually like super. Prolific in terms of you know,
she's been at it constantly.
Like, she's got multiple projects. She's got 50 Foot Wave. She released an EP with them this year. The book is essays. What's she calling it up here? It's a hardcover book of essays and lyrics with two CDs included. Oh, okay. The name comes from an abandoned apartment building behind her studio. Her son spent the majority of the recording session exploring, but it's really good. It's you know, it's kind of, it's, you know, her 50 Foot Wave stuff is kind of, it's basically hard rock. It's just like, you know, real up tempo stuff, and this is kind of you know, definitely like acoustic and almost folky, but it's you know, it's really good. Let's see, I'll give you a couple more and then we'll move on to our top 10. PJ Harvey, Hope Six Demolition Project. This was actually another kind of, almost like, you know, we're talking about like the Downey thing where he's sort of documenting, you know, sort of real life issues. She went to DC. I think she was in like Serbia or something like that. Like, she went to like a bunch of different places around the world. She was kind of documenting kind of, you know, just human rights injustices and just sort of you know, shitty living conditions, and it was almost like she went around with like local reporters, and it was almost like reporting from the front. It's really good. It's the, you know, she's definitely gotten a little more political the last couple of years.
We need more of that.
It's definitely on a lot of, like you were mentioning, like, you know, sort of bigger name year-end list. It's definitely hit those, and I'm a huge PJ fan, so she's actually coming around. She's doing a tour next year. It was a little out of my price range, but
yeah.
But I would have gone if it wasn't so expensive. But yeah, I mean, definitely.
Maybe she'll drop by the house.
Sure, why not? She can come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's. Want to move on to your to top 10 there, Pally?
Yeah, number 10 is an old clicky fave. Not a terribly prolific act, but they, I think, when they aren't releasing music of their own, I think the guys behind the band Cold Pumas, if Clicky Clicky writer Eddie Charlton is to be believed, because I didn't know this, I guess it never occurred to me to research this, I believe the guys from Cold Pumas also run Faux Disc, which is a very solid UK post-punk label, and Cold Pumas released an incredible record maybe about 5 years ago at this point, the name of which escapes me, but they returned this year with a long player called The Hanging Valley, which, you know, sure, it doubles down on kind of that very classic British post-punk sound, but they, you know, sort of temper that with a couple songs. There's a pretty shoegazy song, there's, you know, some different things going on, so, you know, it just wasn't not even reinventing. It wasn't just giving us the same crap again. It wasn't the old wheel, but it was solid. Every song is great. The band is called Pumas, and the record is called Hanging Valley, and that's out on Faux Disc.
All right, my number 10. It's from a band that I you know, I'm a big fan of, and that I already mentioned. It's a Tragically Hip, Gord Downie's band, Man Machine Poem. This is their 13th album. Came out in June, right after they announced that he was diagnosed with the terminal brain cancer I mentioned earlier. They haven't come out and said that this is going to be their last album.
Yeah, they might not know.
But, you know, it's one of those things where they don't know how much, you know, time he's got. It could be years, it could be months. You just don't know. But, Chloe. But, you know, this is a different kind of, different sound for them. They worked with, Kevin Drew.
Oh, yeah, from the scene, the Broken Social
Scene.
And
a guy named Dave Hamlin. And, you know, I think, you know, we talked about this, or I talked about it, at the mid-year. It definitely is some more like almost like an indie sounding album. Like, you know, they were kind of traditionally more of a, you know, I wouldn't say an arena rock band, but like, yeah, you know, kind of a bigger rocking sound. But like, you know,
because they've been around, I mean, like, the context is important. They've been around for a long time, so they were probably coming up listening to, you know, Triumph and Saga, and, you know,
like, they don't really sound like them, but like, you know, I would say they're of
but
know,
coming out of an arena rock.
But
know,
they were, you know, I mean, I think they were kind of like, I think the best parallel to them is Midnight Oil, mm-hmm, in terms of sound.
Yeah,
you know, certainly, like, you know, yes, they both have bald frontmen, but when they started, he wasn't bald. But
it's
yeah,
all the difference.
But you know, that, you know, he's not shy about talking about political stuff either. But yeah, this record definitely. You know, the recording of it just sounds so much different than other albums. Like, you know, their drummer, the drums, the percussion is really almost in the forefront. Like, it's definitely like a different sound from them. Not quite electronic, but you know, it's an interesting sound for them, and it's you know, it's a nice, if that's their last album, it's kind of a good way to go out.
And, yeah.
You know, so anyways, that is my number 10.
My number 9 is the front end of a figurative double shot of Boston X.
Ooh.
It's a new band, and I can't remember the intel I received from young Dylan Riley.
I know that cat.
Yeah, the Clicky Clicky affiliate and writer. But I was surprised to take in this information because I had assumed that this band had kind of sprung from nowhere. But in fact, they have roots in another band whose name I had some familiarity with. But anyway, I'm talking about an act called Strange Passage. Mm-hmm. They self-released an EP called Shine and Scatter that is just really terrific. It's a short one. It's maybe four songs. I think it is four songs. And they're at strangepassage.bandcamp.com, and the music really reminds me of some of the first Ride EPs. You know, before Ride released their record Smile, they did maybe four EPs, I think, which for the most part were, you know, kind of that those songs were bundled together for Smile. But songs like Chelsea Girl and even Taste, I think, was on an EP. So I guess those weren't all before Smile, but anyway, there's a side of Ride that is, you know, kind of present everywhere except maybe on Nowhere, isn't necessarily just like, you know, so rigidly shoegaze, and the Strange Passage takes some inspiration from the less shoegaze aspects of Ride, and the songs are really catchy, and there's some interesting imagery. The song Viaducts Burning Down that's coming up right now, you know, seems to have like, it seems to be about Pompeii or something, and who doesn't get behind that?
Pompeii rock, baby.
So I have been encouraging, you know, everyone who they say, well, what are you into this year? This is one of the first thing that comes to mind, you know, on balance against everything else on the list. They rate a 9, but that's because of various important and esoteric checks and balances, you know. But
sure.
So for a debut effort, this is very promising. I expect Strange Passage to be doing things that we like and we'll be impressed by for years to come, hopefully.
Cool.
They do that instead of just hitting real hard on the front end and then just walking away, which is very frustrating from a fan standpoint. So, just played their first show at the Democracy Center, you know, like in August, so they're still coming up.
Wow, so they're like a young band.
Yeah, they are a young band. Though, like I said, I did learn from whence they came. I just can't remember offhand. So, but very, very rewarding listen. The Shine and Scatter EP by Strange Passage. It's on Bandcamp.
Very cool.
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That wraps up episode 452 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time when Jay Breitling and I continue our annual roundup of the year in indie rock. In the meantime, check out BFF.fm every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, to hear my radio show Stuck in the Garage. Check out Mixcloud.com/Coombdog to listen to archived shows. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of this show. Voiceover works courtesy of James Grelian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.